Traditional emphasis on GDP fails to consider the costs of growth from environmental destruction or neglect, or on the positive side, the strengths of an economy that come from embracing sustainable development and protection of natural resources. China seems ready to continue the S&T. An embassy spokesman in Washington said, quote, China is ready to discuss the content and form of the agreement with the United States on the basis of equality and mutual benefit, unquote. Harvard's John Holdren, who signed the initial S&T when he served as Obama's director of the Office of Science and Technology Policy, agrees. The S&T signing, he said, gave a form of permission for lab-to-lab, university-to-university, scientist-to-scientist cooperation. It legitimized the whole notion that collaboration was respectable. That spirit needs to be revitalized. It has served both countries well, and renewal is especially important now at a time of technological decoupling between the two countries. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, March 26th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertoff. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Farah Siddiqui, Terry D., Antonio Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, and Mike Moen. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members, lovely folks like you. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
From the Coast Range Association, this is Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. On today's show, Canopy of Titans, the life and times of the great North American temperate rainforest. Canopy of Titans is a new book written by journalists Paul Koberstein and Jessica Applegate, which shines a light on the critical importance of protecting the temperate rainforests of the Pacific Northwest. Paul and Jessica spent years reporting and researching for this book, traveling all the way from the Redwoods up to Alaska and interviewing dozens of scientists, activists, experts, and even a few industry shills along the way. The result is a truly moving celebration of the incredible forests that we all fight for and a major contribution to that fight. Canopy of Titans has also just been announced as a finalist for the 2024 Oregon Book Awards, and I am thrilled to be joined by one of the authors, Paul Koberstein. Before we get started, please make sure to subscribe to Coast Range Radio for free on any podcast app so you never miss an episode, or listen at coastrange.org. And please share this episode with a friend or two. Also, huge thanks to the community radio stations that carry our show. Okay, Paul Koberstein, welcome to Coast Range Radio.
Thanks, Michael. I appreciate the invite to be here. It's great to see you.
Well, I am so glad to have you on. Congratulations on this book. I enjoyed it so much, and I really can't wait to get into it with you. So let's just jump right in. What is Canopy of Titans about? You know, what were you hoping to accomplish by the monumental task of writing this book?
That's a great question. To me, Canopy of Titans frames the global importance of the coastal rainforest that stretches from Northern California, as you say, to Alaska, a distance of about 2,500 miles. There's two bands, one along the coast, Coast Range, coastal mountains of Washington and British Columbia and Alaska, as well as the inland Cascade Range from Crater Lake north to around Vancouver. This forest stores large amounts of carbon for long periods of time, which helps mitigate climate change. We argue that these trees need to be protected. Most people know that burning fossil fuels is the main cause of climate change. But if all we do is stop burning the fossil fuels and stop emitting more carbon, it won't be enough. We also have to remove the vast amount of carbon we've already put into the air. There's nothing that does that better than forests. We found that these forests on the Pacific Coast, acre per acre, sequester more carbon and store for longer periods of time than any other forest in the world, including the Amazon. This is the largest temperate rainforest in the world, which includes all forests outside the tropics and home to the world's tallest trees. In our book, we call it the Pacific Coast Rainforest, the Amazon of the North, and Canopy of Titans. But we really think it needs an official name so people can readily latch onto it and join a worldwide campaign to save it.
Yeah, a catchy name is really important. I really appreciate how many different directions you all took this, because I think that there is something for everyone to learn here, whether you are new to forest activism or whether you're a researcher with decades of experience. I think that there is something for everybody here. So before we go any further, I just want to make sure that you have an opportunity to, you know, plug where people can find Canopy of Titans.
Well, hopefully it'll be at your local neighborhood bookstore. We know it's available in places in Portland, Powell's and Tsunami Books in Eugene.
And I think folks can also find it on the Cascadia Times website, and that's just times.org, correct?
Yes, people can order it online from the publisher or our books, and we have a link on our website, times.org, that will take you to the right place.
Well, like I was touching on there, you cover so many different topics. You cover a lot of ground, literally and figuratively, and I really gained a much better appreciation of the forest ecotypes of the Pacific Northwest. I wonder if you could talk about some of the things that surprised you through your research.
When we started writing this book in 2018, Jessica and I, we were surprised initially at how little government agencies like the Forest Service and the Oregon Department of Forestry really understood about the need to protect these forests to mitigate climate change. And the reason I say that is that they talk about climate change, but they don't really talk about the solution and they talk about climate change as an impact on forests. The forests are burning and so on, but protecting forests, it was never really part of their scheme. And even in the conservation community, this had really not taken hold. Oregon Wild and others had come up with the phrase, forest defense is climate defense, and that is really true. And we need to protect forests to protect climate. So I was surprised by the lack of awareness of this important resource. But I was also surprised by what we learned when we got into the weeds. For example, do you realize that protecting salmon is also important to the climate? Because salmon, when they spawn in a forest, all the trees near the spawning sites will grow faster and larger because the salmon will bring in nutrients from the ocean. And then when they die, their carcasses will be picked up by eagles, bears, wolves, other critters, and taken into the forest where they decompose and are absorbed by the root system. So the role of salmon is really key. And so is the beaver. One professor at Oregon State University told me that most cost-effective climate change solution we can do is to protect beaver and stop the beaver hunt, which is being sponsored by the state of Oregon. Because beaver, especially when they take up residence in the estuaries, will create habitat for salmon, and salmon will survive three times better in the ocean if they've been reared in the presence of beaver. The science was an eye-opener to me.
Yeah, that symbiosis between the beaver and the salmon is so beautiful. That's interesting to hear you talk about the disconnect around carbon sequestration and in the dialogue. And I feel like that has really changed a lot over the last few years, especially, I mean, if you just look at the sort of propaganda that the timber industry has pivoted to in the last couple of years, you can really tell how much that has penetrated because they feel the need to address that. And I wonder if you've noticed that change happening as well.
You know, I have had the opportunity to watch the timber industry do all kinds of things with the facts.
Yeah.
Over several decades, I used to cover forests for the Oregonian back in the 1980s and early 90s. And I was, you know, on the beat while the timber industry and spotted owl were getting headlines and the Northwest Forest Plan was being developed over the years. And I remember when the timber industry was adamant that there's no comparison between this forest and the tropical rainforest, the Amazon, because they didn't want anybody to use, you know, the value, the size of these forests as a reason to protect them. We've obviously found out that's bullshit. You know, so today they are attacking the scientists who have come up with the science that shows this relationship between climate and protecting forests. They believe, and this is one of the myths of the book that we explode.
Mm-hmm.
They believe it's better to store carbon in lumber and wood products than it is in the forest, which is just wrong. But it serves their bottom line, I suppose.
That would be such a fun like side project someday to sort of go through, you know, timber propaganda through the years. I think that would be a fun read. So I felt like Canopy of Titans was, despite, you know, anytime you're talking about this issue of forest destruction and climate change, it's going to be emotional. It's going to be depressing at times. But I really felt like Canopy of Titans was a hopeful book, which I think is an achievement in and of itself. What gave you the most hope or fortitude coming out of this process?
I think the best answer to that is the fact that if we protect forests worldwide, especially old, mature forests that store the most carbon, we can actually achieve a solution to the climate crisis. We know how to do it. We just don't have the will or the patience, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a way through this. It's not easy. It's not going to be easy. We can do it. That's the theme of the book, is that this is possible. We can take the win. Just follow these steps.
So to that end, I wonder what you think are some of the main barriers to protecting these forests. And I'm going to stipulate that I mostly mean on public lands, because I think the private land issue is different. But we could talk about that as well. But yeah, what are some of the big barriers you see to durable protections?
One of the things that we discovered in writing this book, and I didn't have any idea about beforehand, was that not all forests are the same in terms of their value to their importance to the climate. Mm-hmm. Some forests store more carbon per acre than other forests, and that's simply a fact. And our research found that the forests that store the most carbon are the ones in the redwoods, the Douglas fir, the Sitka spruce forests on the Pacific coast. And because of this data, we know which forest makes the most sense to protect and which forest can be used for supplying our needs for timber. I mean, we need wood. If we want wood, we can cut areas that don't have as much value to the climate. And the book provides a roadmap to where to find those forests and which ones are the most valuable.
Well, so given that, what you know, we see, so just to like be more specific, you know, we see the Forest Service and BLM being tasked by the Biden administration with developing a protocol around protecting mature and old growth forests. And when the initial kind of proposals come out, all of a sudden they're talking about old growth, but they're not talking about mature forests. And you just get the sense that in spite of everything we're dealing with and everything we've learned, there is still this pushback from agencies around protecting these important forests in the way that they should. And I wonder if you have thoughts on that. You could also maybe go into some of the work you did and elucidated in the book around some of these industry front groups and what you call their playbook.
Yeah, but let me start with the National Old Growth Amendment, which you correctly say is geared at protecting old growth and not mature. And the reason we want to protect mature forests, first of all, let's define what we mean by mm-hmm. a mature forest. A mature forest is about 100 years old or older, and an old growth is about 175 to 250 years. So the mature forest is simply an old growth forest that will achieve that status in a few decades. and it's growing fast. It's absorbing carbon at a rapid rate. And, you know, if we want to protect the climate, we have to protect trees that absorb, sequester the most carbon. So there's that problem with the old-growth policy. The other problem is that while the administration, at the same time they're talking about protecting old-growth mature forests, they're cutting them down. According to a survey we did, we know of at least 13 national forests and about 2 million acres of BLM land where old-growth trees are being logged as we speak. We find it a little bit hypocritical that the Forest Service would be claiming to protect old growth at the same time it's cutting them down. The other problem comes when the Forest Service talks about its strategy to prevent wildfire. And you, as you know, wildfire is a serious problem throughout the West especially. And their plan is to thin forests, reduce fuels in forests, and by doing so, they can protect communities that are located near or inside those forest areas. Problem with that is that the thinning they are proposing to do won't protect anybody. These forests will, when they burn, usually the worst fires are associated with high winds that carry firebrands from the forest for several miles, and they will land on rooftops and in backyards where they will, you know, catch everything they land on fire. The timber industry sees this as a huge windfall. They're expecting a up to a tenfold increase in the amount of wood coming out of the forest for their own processing and mills, which is a huge economic bonanza. The other thing you mentioned was this playbook. And we profile a researcher at Oregon State University. Her name is Beverly Law. You've probably heard about her. She has done some of the groundbreaking science on the importance of old forests to the climate. Her study in 2018 said that if we protect old growth and mature forests and delay harvest in tree farms by 40 years or 80 years even, we can make a huge dent in the climate problem. Of course, the timber industry did not like to hear this message simply because that meant they'd lose money. And, you know, as you folks at the Coast Range Association well know, these forests are owned by Wall Street entities like equity funds, real estate investment trusts, and so on. Their interest is not to be mindful of the ecology or the climate. They're after dollars. They want return on investment, and they want it as fast as they can get.
Absolutely.
Which means that these harvests have rotations that have shrunk from 40 years a few years ago, decades ago, to now 30 or even 20 years. They'll cut those trees down as quickly as they can if they can think they can make a profit. So Beverly Law came along. She wrote this paper in 2018, was viciously attacked by the industry, claiming her data was untethered from reality and said that no one should take it seriously. That didn't happen. Researchers around the world have taken it very seriously. In 2019, a professor at Tufts University in Boston used her paper to devise a theory called proforestation, which means protecting trees for the climate. And William Mumma took Beverly Law's theory, which was applied only to Oregon, and extended worldwide. He calculated that we can remove about 3/4 of the carbon that's in the air already by simply protecting these trees, which would be huge. If we did it, we would go a huge way with regard to solving our climate crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. You're reminding me of an anecdote that started one of the chapters in your book where the billionaire investor Richard Branson offered a prize to whoever could, maybe you can tell the story better than I, but whoever could devise basically a device that would efficiently and cheaply pull carbon out of the air. And the conservationist Andy Kerr sent a drawing of a tree, right?
Right. So I actually had prepared to read that section.
Oh,
as
perfectly.
Part of this broadcast. I can read that section to you if you'd like.
Perfect.
I'll turn the slide on. And
what a great segue.
And yes. So this comes from the second chapter entitled Too Good to Be True. In 2007, Richard Branson, the British entrepreneur, offered a $25 million prize for anyone inventing a device capable of removing lots of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Andy Kerr, the noted Oregon environmentalist and author, drew a picture of a tree and sent it in. But he didn't win, foiled by contest rules specifying the winner must be the inventor of such a device. But Kerr didn't invent the tree, but he had a point. Through the process of photosynthesis, trees inhale carbon dioxide, one of the greenhouse gases behind the rise in global temperatures. CO2 is one part carbon and two part oxygen. Trees are one half carbon. They retain the carbon to make glucose and recycle carbon, the oxygen, back to the air. Living in dead trees, along with forest soils, hold the equivalent of 80% of all the carbon currently in the atmosphere. If there's one thing the planet has in abundance, it's trees. A study in 2015 by Yale University ecologist Thomas Crowther counted 3 million trees on Earth, or 422 for each person. Without trees, life would be difficult, if not impossible. Trees are a source of food, medicine, fuel, shelter, and recreation for billions of people. In the Pacific coastal temperate rainforest, trees freshen the air with their signature scents of fir, pine, spruce, and cedar. They stabilize soils, retain moisture, and filter pollution from the air and water. They cast a cooling shade over streams that are home to millions of salmon. Salmon return the favor by bringing nutrients from the ocean in an ecological feedback loop. The tree's most important task, however, may be removing carbon from the atmosphere. But it's not something a single tree does alone. The clusters of trees we call forests form this service on a massive scale, free of charge, without complaint. They are carbon capturing machines.
Beautiful. Thank you for reading that. This kind of, in a roundabout way, brings me to asking about, you know, the taking action. Obviously, the first step anybody should take is to read Canopy of Titans, which it sounds like you can get at a lot of independent bookstores or at the Cascadia Times website, times.org. But after they do that, of course, what do you think, after going through this process, are the best avenues and pathways for people to engage to protect these critical forests?
We answer that question, I think, very directly at the end of chapter two. We cite an ancient Chinese proverb that says that the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago, and the next best time to plant a tree is today. We turn that around a little bit. Actually, the best time to plant a tree is 1,000 years ago, if you can go back in time. But the best thing you can do today is save a tree. So what that means is that we need to save our existing trees. You know, as every forest activist will tell you, to save a tree, to save a forest, you have to work at it every day. But to liquidate a forest, they only have to do it once.
Absolutely. And that is especially true right now when time is so of the essence here. You know, given infinite time, these forests will grow back, right? But we don't have infinite time. We are in the middle of a worsening climate crisis. And so we need to protect these trees now. It's not enough to plant, as you talk about in the book, it's not enough to plant young trees, right? We have to protect the ones that are growing now, protect the old growth, let the mature trees reach old growth age and carbon sequestration potential. But
we don't say it's a bad idea to plant trees, but if you're going to go plant trees and expect the climate to somehow be saved, you're deluding yourself. And there is a lot of propaganda and greenwashing around tree planting, and you probably notice ads on TV from the timber industry boasting about how many trees they planted in the last year. This is all hogwash. I mean, maybe they did plant those trees, but did they protect the climate? Not at all. That's
right.
The point.
Yeah, thank you for that clarification. You were actually just, I think, quoting there from another section of the book that I wanted to ask you about. So I live in rural Lincoln County, and so the Siuslaw National Forest is the nearest national forest to me. And you have a chapter called The Siuslaw Liquidation. I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite chapters because it describes how this rainforest was liquidated. The Siuslaw National Forest is a microcosm of the larger temperate rainforest, The Siesla, as you may know, is some of the most productive tree growing land in the world. These trees grow tall, they're Douglas fir, they're genetically inclined to be big, and they store a huge amount of carbon. From 1960 to 1990, this forest was transformed from basically wall-to-wall old growth to clear cut after clear cut. And I'm sure if you look out your backyard, you can see plenty of these beautiful, expansive clear cuts that they've created. The timber industry wanted to, their plan actually, and it's in writing, and it's quoted in the book, was to do the same as they did to this forest, to every national forest in the Northwest. And they were stopped by the Northwest Forest Plan, but, and when it came along in the mid-90s, they didn't realize it, but when the Forest Service enacted this plan, they were creating the best climate protection plan yet devised by anyone, and they didn't even know it.
I thought that was one of my favorite chapters as well. And I will shamelessly take this opportunity to plug that the Coast Range Association is following the Northwest Forest Plan amendment process, which I'm not sure if we've talked about recently on this program, but the Forest Service is updating the Northwest Forest Plan for the first time in its history, and the Coast Range Association will be closely following that and engaging, especially when it comes to amendments to the Siesla Plan. So if folks want to learn about that and keep updated, this is where the shameless plug comes in. You can go to our website, coastrange.org, and you can subscribe to our newsletter.
If I can shamelessly plug my work.
Absolutely, yeah. This is mainly about you. I just had to get that one in there.
And I don't mean to say my work, because I work with a co-author, Jessica Applegate, who is managing editor of Cascade Times, and she unfortunately could not be here today. But Jessica and I are tracking this amendment process very closely. We spent a few days with the Federal Advisory Commission that is working on developing recommendations to the Forest Service for this plan. And it's our impression that one of the chairmen of this commission, this panel, is employed by the timber industry, by the American Forest Products Association. And their point of view is that the Northwest Forest Plan did not deliver to them enough timber, at least as much as they thought was being promised back in the day. And they want to weaken this plan. So the fight will be over the next year, will be whether the Forest Service will be aligning with the timber industry's call for more logging or align with call to protect trees for the climate. And I have no idea where they're going to land. My guess is that they're probably going to weaken the plan. And, you know, if that's the case, it's bad news for the climate. And so we have to watch. I'm glad you guys are working on that.
Absolutely. And where can people follow the work that you're doing to follow that?
We will post everything we do on our website. It's a news website, www.times.org. We've been in business since 1995. We've tracked these issues over the years very closely and continue to do so. There are three processes that the Biden administration has undertaken with regard to these forests: the Northwest Forest Plan, which we just talked about, the National Old Growth Amendment Process, where they're trying to look at old forests on a national basis, and then there's the Wildfire Strategy, which is basically a strategy to cut these forests down, at least some of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are so many amazing activists and researchers that you all profile in this book, so many amazing ecosystems and forests. I loved reading it. I really recommend everybody go out and, whether you get it from the library or, of course, you know, best of all, supporting Paul and Jessica by buying it at your local bookstore or times.org. I really recommend everybody get a hold of it.
Well, gosh, thanks. This has been great, Michael. I love the idea of your podcast. It's great. And I really, really appreciate what you're trying to do.
Well, thank you.
And as well, the Coast Range Association.
Yeah.
I mean, Chuck Willard has been at this for as long as I have, or maybe longer, I'm not sure. And he's done such great work especially with Wall Street Forestry. I got to tell you that I relied on, you know, his research for a good part of the book. And I give a shout out to Chuck and all that he's done. In fact, he did a panel in, I'm going to say, December 2018, which I found out a lot of the background of climate and forests during that event. And so he was one of the inspirations for this book. He probably doesn't know it.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, I'll make sure he finds out. Paul, thank you so much for coming on Coast Range Radio.
Thank you so much, Michael. I appreciate that.
And that's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. If you appreciate this show, please share it with your friends and give us a good review on whatever podcast app you use. My email is michael@coastrange.org. I always love hearing feedback and guest ideas. So as usual, I had to cut out a lot of good stuff for this episode, including Paul's research into the original theft of Coast Range indigenous land and how tribes have fought for recognition. For the full interview, search for Coast Range Radio on any podcast app or go to our website, coastrange.org. Lastly, please make sure to sign up for our highly informative and never spammy newsletter to keep up to date on our fight to protect the Siuslaw National Forest this year, upcoming events, and more. Again, that's also at our website, coastrange.org. Thank you so much for listening to Coast Range Radio. We'll be back in a couple weeks.
Hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to KBOO, KBOO, 90.7 FM, Portland.
KBOO's board is recruiting director.